It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying, there is no running, there is no hiding, there's only fighting or dying. It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying, there is no running, there is no hiding, there's only fighting or dying.
It's Going Down is a digital community center from anarchist, anti-fascist, autonomous, anti-capitalist, and anti-colonial movements. Our mission is to provide an autonomous and resilient platform to publicize and promote revolutionary theory and action.
Go to itsgoingdown.org for daily updates. Check out our online store for ways to donate and rate and follow us on iTunes if you like this podcast. Okay, thank you for tuning into the It's Going Down podcast. We're doing something interesting today. We're talking to a group that's part of the Democratic Socialists of America. Originally, we reached out to two groups that we find that we have political affinity with. One is the Libertarian Socialist Caucus of the DSA. The other one is the Communist Caucus of the DSA, which is like an anti-state or left communist caucus within the DSA, to essentially talk about you know, why these groups exist within a large organization that may be, not on along the same political bandwidth as that we find ourselves or even the groups that we're talking about. So, but just to get started, can you all introduce yourselves?
Sure, I'll go ahead. I'm Crucifer Barella, she, her, and I'm out of Eugene.
And I am Communal Source, I also she, her, and I am in the Bay Area. I'm also part of DSA Medics as well as the Libertarian Socialist Caucus.
Mm-hmm. So to get started off, just for people that don't know or don't have that much background, you know, what is the DSA? It is not a new organization. It's been around for several decades, and it's kind of come into the current limelight due to growing exponentially by tens of thousands of members kind of post-Bernie. But can you just talk a little bit about, you know, what is the DSA and, you know, what is its history overall?
Well, DSA is a nonprofit organization, an organization of socialists. It's not a political party. It was originally formed in 1982 when delegates from two different socialist groups met and formed the organization. And you say that it's not really a new organization, but given the huge spike in membership post-Bernie and since 2016, it really is functioning like a new organization just due to the infusion of new blood and new members who may have quite different ideologies to members of DSA back in 2014.
So then what's the history of the Libertarian Socialist Caucus itself and how did it come to be?
Sure. So we started with about 35 to 40 members a few months before the 2017 DSA convention. And we had our first official meeting there. Which I have to say, we met all of our agenda items. We had great organization. And since then, our membership has really swelled. Currently, we're just over 475 members, and it's only been 10 months or so since the founding of the caucus. We are, right now, we think we are the largest organized national grouping within DSA. Currently, we've got 25 locals at different points of being organized. Hmm. Some of them, So some of them are just beginning, and others already are chartered chapters and have their own steering committees.
For those of us that are, like, just so far out of, I mean, like myself, and I think a lot of people that are listening to this, just so far out of the DSA lexicon, was there something that was important about that meeting in 2017?
The 2017 convention was the first DSA convention since the giant membership boost, and so it was the first convention for a DSA that looked very differently. And the fact that the Libertarian Socialist Caucus meeting went off without a hitch, all on time, got all of our agenda items covered, was kind of in stark contrast to the some of the ways that some of the rest of the convention happened. There was there were quite a few things. The agenda on the main convention had to be rearranged because we ran out of time for things, but the Libertarian Socialist Caucus, despite what people may say about anarchists and libertarian socialists being unable to have a meeting that lasts less than 3 weeks, we managed it.
I'm just curious too, not to go off on another tangent, but the process in which the caucus itself came about, was that just people that already knew each other within DSA that had anti-authoritarian and anarchist politics just already knowing each other, and then just saying like we should form this, or how did the kernel even kind of come together with those initial 40 or so people?
Sure. Actually, no. It wasn't necessarily people that knew each other. It came out of a kernel of a few folks that said, "Hey, is anyone interested in these ideas?" And it's grown from there. People nationwide, since its inception, have gotten together and met over the values within our caucus. Mm-hmm. And at the convention, we drew a lot of interest because we had been kind of talking about it, and we really have listened to the members that have been coast to coast and all over the country. So we've really done a great job. We worked for a long time on our bylaws, of course, and it was a really, really great experience for all of us to come in together and kind of set the tone of what our shared values are and how we want to work together.
Hmm. And now just kind of turning towards, you know, the ideology of the ideas behind the group, is libertarian socialism the same thing as anarchism? Essentially the same thing? You know, is it just like a less scary term maybe for some people, or how would you see the ideology itself?
Well, libertarian socialism, I think of as being the lower left quadrant of that political orientation graph. So the Libertarian Socialist Caucus is a big tent caucus that has hard anarchists, syndicalists, communalists, which you probably can guess from my Twitter username is something that I'm lean towards. Mm-hmm. We have Democratic Confederalists, general anti-authoritarians, those who just may consider themselves down to the left politically but don't really have a particular tendency. Mm-hmm. And also I was not present for the choosing of the name of the caucus name. If I had been there, I would have voted for like the Google Murray Bookchin caucus or something like that. Because the first thing you have to go through after you explain that you're a libertarian socialist is, wait, no, it's not one of those libertarians.
Right.
Yeah. You know, speaking for myself, something that I noticed within the Libertarian Socialist Caucus is kind of this, like a pragmatic anarchist approach. So instead of maybe having a particular label attached to their ideology, they sort of work within the needs of their community. So kind of what their vision of libertarian socialism looks like to each of them, it might be different, but what they call it, municipalism or communalism or what have you, like we still have those same shared values at the root of it. So I think that's kind of the most important thing about us. Like we're the big tent within the big tent, right?
Mm-hmm. So I think at this point, many would ask, you know, why set up an anarchist group or libertarian socialist group? I'm for the sake of, you know, keeping it simple, I'm going to kind of use those terms interchangeably. But many people would ask, why set up an anarchist group inside the DSA when you could just as well form, you know, a Black Rose chapter or something else, you know, outside of, you know, the DSA umbrella? Like, why exist within a larger organization that holds politics, many would argue, very fundamentally opposed to yours?
I'm going to push back on that fundamentally opposed bit.
Okay.
A little bit. Considering that we are the largest caucus within DSA, so that's hardly the mark of an organization that fundamentally disagrees with our ideals. DSA is the largest socialist organization since the 1930s Communist Party. And so for me personally, it made sense for me to be in DSA because that was where I was going to find the most comrades about myself, at least were speaking the same language as me. And one of the great things about being a part of DSA, from my perspective, is although I have friendships within the Libertarian Socialist Caucus, I also have comrades that I talk with who are, you know, Marxist-Leninists, or who are, bless their little hearts, social democrats, who I am gradually trying to radicalize. But because we're under the auspices of a larger organization, learning that we can work together on this broad set of ideals, like that we all fucking hate capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
We can get together, we can discuss and debate, we can come to a consensus on the large things without falling into this People's Front of Judea kind of situation where you have an affinity group of three who doesn't talk to an affinity group of five and nobody really knows what's going on.
Mm-hmm. I think for me, like I know that DSA, it is a multi-tendency organization, and those of us in LSC, we take that seriously. And we, like we say, we're the big tent within the big tent, but it's not just working within our big tent, it's working within all of it. So, like, I just got back from Occupy Portland, Occupy ICE in Portland, and, you know, we had folks there that were in the Libertarian Socialist Caucus, but also folks in all kinds of other tendencies within DSA, but at the root of it, we're all doing the work, and we all have those same shared values, but maybe ours just looks a little different, and that's totally okay.
Right. Well, let's talk about how that kind of looks a little different, because I think the next thing that people would ask is like, okay, so if Libertarian Socialist Caucus within DSA is the largest caucus, and I'm going off script here, but is the goal itself to basically turn the DSA into, you know, a by and large libertarian socialist organization? Like, is that the end goal, is to basically, I don't know what entry is.
To make
the politics by and large libertarian socialist. Is that the goal? Because I mean, I've talked to like old Trotskyists and other people that you know, have like spent some time around the DSA, and they've told me like how basically every single left group is trying to basically infiltrate the DSA and like switch it towards its own brand of, you know, whatever politics.
Oh, right. I think we have just a radically different approach. We're, you know, I think, you know, based on the ideology that we all share, we're not really into sources of power that would come from doing an entryism and taking over. And we, you know, we openly welcome people that share our values. I think a lot about geography and how important that is. And we all have to work within our community. And whether that means you have to work on a city council election to affect change, or it means direct action, or a combination of both, we have to have those, right? Like, I think part of the problem in the way that we left groups have been going along is that they've been so much more homogenized. But when we have grassroots activism, we have to have both a heterogeneous, like we share our values, but also all kinds of different groups with their own set of broad values. And that's the only way that I think that we can affect change.
Yeah, I'm pass on that because you just covered everything.
Well, if you could just kind of peel back the curtain for those of us not in DSA, like, is there a tension within the organization? And you kind of spoke to this saying that there wasn't, but is there a tension between those that like are really interested in electoralism, like getting people elected, and people that you know, instead want to like build power from below and build grassroots movements? And also, does the Libertarian Socialist Caucus hope to like pick a side within that tension and sort of push in a certain direction?
There's going to be some level of tension just purely because some members are all in for electoral politics, while others, many of whom are drawn to the Libertarian Socialist Caucus, prefer the kind of praxis that is more direct action, mutual aid, dual power, participatory democracy, and local organizing. And so there is some sense of tension in terms of there's always this difficulty between separating critique of someone's approach versus critique of the person themselves. And so there's always that kind of little interpersonal tension when somebody says, oh, I don't think that brake lights is the best use of our time right now. When if you are very personally invested in brake lights, you think, oh, they think that I am useless, like that kind of tension. But I think as a caucus, we make an effort to promote and assist chapters with forms of praxis that kind of fit the Libertarian Socialists Caucus's approach. So we have cross membership with DSA Medics, and we've had trainings coast to coast on DSA Medics and things like that. Meanwhile, there are members in other chapters, or members who aren't in the LSC, who are working on the electoral politics because that's more of their jam.
I think one of the great things about LSC is that I cannot guarantee what LSC's position would be because we are focused on radical democracy. So we, you know, we would take it to the membership, we would have discussion on it, and we would vote on it. And so it really depends on how the membership feels at that time.
Right. But is it fair to say, it's been a while, I have read through the kind of position statements, but it's been a while. I mean, is it fair to say that the caucus is anti-statist and is, you know, against the political state, and, you know, by and large sees participation within that, like running candidates, for instance, to be, you know, antithetical to the positions of the organization? Is that fair to say?
Well, being a caucus of like lower left socialists rather than a caucus of social democrats, most of us aren't really drawn to electoral politics. Mm-hmm. And those of us who are drawn to electoral politics really focus on local participatory democracy, like the Richmond Progressive Alliance or Barcelona en Comú, which I apologize for my terrible pronunciation, or participation in local politics on the level of socialist dogmas, involvement in the Charlottesville, involved in the very hyper-local participatory democracy and making an effort to make a change there rather than the general election kind of political involvement.
And so something that we, you know, I can't speak for everyone, but like in my chapter and some other folks I've been talking to, they take a different approach to state politics, where we may not focus on the electoral at all, but there's a whole world between the elections where we can do things that still fit within our praxis as a caucus, and also kind of, again, with the shared values, right? So we can go, for instance, since I live in Oregon, I go to Salem, and I have done my research on the kinds of money that my particular senator gets, and I talk to them directly and, you know, confront them. And I'm not taking part in the electoral world, but I'm working with what the electoral world has produced.
So just to kind of continue on this discussion about electoralism, from reading certain articles, you know that in some cities, Democratic and liberal politicians will go to DSA chapters and basically, I don't know if lobby is actually the correct word, but basically present themselves, and the chapter will vote if they're going to support that candidate. How do you feel about the Democratic Party, or at least some people within the Democratic Party, or who are going to run on the Democratic Party ticket, you know, asking the DSA for support, and then in theory, the DSA then could, you know, back those candidates.
So each of our individual chapters in DSA decides what they want to do or who they will endorse, if they do at all, because they all enjoy that local autonomy. And, I mean, that's important when we consider the effectiveness of a nationwide effort to make change. We hold an advantage because our chapters can engage in the most kind of geographically ideal ways instead of those like bland, homogenous campaigns that I mentioned before. And we've seen those come out of neoliberalism and progressivism. In my experience, and I can't speak for the whole of LSC, but you know, being in Eugene and considering the history of our politics in Eugene and the anarchist history there, we've chosen not to endorse at all. We welcome politicians to come speak to us, but it is always up to the chapter to decide, and we have never voted for it. Other chapters may feel differently about it, but in our chapter, for instance, the vast majority of our members are in our LSC or LSC adjacent.
Do y'all like kind of have like a signal that you tell the other LSC members you're like down with the LSC to like?
Yeah, the black and red rose pin. Oh, you wear it to a meeting, right. And we all just like wink and nod.
You know, do like a little LSC hand sign to like.
Yeah, we just had elections for our chapter, and now I can say our entire coordinating committee is LSC.
Oh,
congratulations.
Yeah.
What does that mean exactly for those that don't understand?
Yeah. So each of our chapters in DSA have their own chapter elections that are autonomous within the chapter, and they hold those at whatever time the chapter decides. We have come up on our first year of existence in Eugene, so it was time for us to have a new election. When we did our bylaws, actually, initially, we kind of took power away from the chair. We made the entire, what you would call leadership, we call more facilitation and coordination. So we have a coordinating committee that works to facilitate whatever the members want to do. And so we just had our elections, and each of the members of the new coordinating committee just happened to be LSC members.
And like, go ahead.
One of the things that Christopher Barella has kind of been hitting on is that each individual DSA chapter has this level of autonomy. Uh-huh. And so you may find some chapters that are structured more hierarchically. You may find chapters like my own that are trying to organize as horizontally as possible, with only the bare minimum of elected positions and those purely as kind of figureheads with no actual power. Right. So it really varies widely by chapter, and that is also, I think, one of the benefits to DSA in terms of it's almost a federated structure. It's not vertically organized. I know that people suggest that it is, but when DSA was formed, many members had seen what happened to SDS and purposefully structured DSA in a more decentralized fashion so that it couldn't be seized, or it couldn't fall apart the way that SDS had. And so my local is significantly different from the East Bay local, and they're significantly different from the Silicon Valley local chapter, because the approach that a chapter takes and the structure in many cases that a chapter takes is based on the interests of its members. In most cases, that works. In some cases, you may have a chapter that is extremely long-standing and very resistant to change, even as the membership changes. But that's kind of outside of the LSC topic, and probably more something that the Communist Caucus has talked about.
But you were saying that the DSA is more of a federated organization. And again, for those that are not in the organization or don't really, have not been in DSA, but isn't there still like a hierarchical central body? How does that work exactly?
There is a national office, and there is a national political committee, the NPC, which is elected at every convention, and that they do have some power vested in them, but a lot of power has just due to the structure and also the fact that DSA grew so quickly, it's more autonomy kind of either purposefully or accidentally ended up with the chapters. And I think Christopher Barella can talk a little bit more about local autonomy and the way that DSA is organized.
Within LSC, because we've really set up mechanisms of radical transparency and radical democracy, and that radical accountability. So we give ourselves, I think, more freedom of movement than any other place on the left, because we established from the outset what our expectations are of ourselves. And because we subscribe to radical transparency, we have accountability to each other. And because, again, we subscribe to radical democracy, we can freely share our opinions, but we respect the will of the membership as a whole.
It sounds a lot like how the IWW is organized.
We do have some cross membership, yeah.
Yeah, just in the sense that, like, the IWW has a, I don't want to say the word central committee, but, you know, it has like an elected board, basically, whose job it is basically is between conventions to, you know, do certain tasks. And if, you know, if they fuck up or if there's a problem, then they can get recalled, obviously. But the power itself really is in the hands of the locals. You know, it's about them doing the work. And if they're not doing the work, then the organization doesn't really function. The people that are basically entrusted to, just do certain tasks throughout the year or whatever, you know, they don't really have any power in so much mm-hmm. as, you know, they're mm-hmm. just basically doing legwork for people.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a lot of what we definitely subscribe to that. You know, the people, mm-hmm. if there is to be a quote unquote top, those people are facilitators that can help folks in what we say rank and file, help them see the connections and help them make those connections rather than, you know, dictating or mandating the work.
Right. And I mean, there has been examples of, you know, like in the IWW of people, you know, trying to pass certain things or, you know, mm-hmm. do certain things that, you know, have been, you know, not looked upon favorably and could be seen definitely mm-hmm. people abusing their authority or power, but.
Absolutely. And I think we find that in any organization.
Yeah.
I think LSC is well equipped because we believe in a strong recall mechanism and we built a strong recall mechanism. And so we know what it's like if we have, someone in that central committee acting in malfeasance or not acting within our values.
Within DSA as a whole, and I say this as an individual DSA member, not as a representative of LSC, but DSA as a whole, there is some verticality, there is some hierarchy to it, and I believe that that is doing DSA a disservice, because when you have a small group of people who are the only people who have the power to do a certain thing, and then the frequency with which they have to do a certain thing becomes so much more than they were expecting, the thing doesn't get done. And that's just like generic for anything. And within LSC, I really appreciate that the caucus is not organized that way, that it is horizontally organized. And if a thing needs doing and somebody can do the thing, somebody can do the thing rather than having to wait for somebody in New York or in an office somewhere to do the thing. And I'm being specifically generic because it kind of comes up in a bunch of different things. When DSA had the giant swell in membership cards were taking a very, very long time to go out. I think there were some members who joined for a year and received their DSA membership card after their membership had lapsed and they had chosen not to renew. Because the only group that was making the cards was national, and they had so much other stuff going on. And so one of the things that I ideally would like to see more from DSA, and hopefully the members can nudge this, would be for National to kind of accept our help when there are things that we think we can do.
Shenandoah with the B exec, trying to start a whole new life, and he ain't looking back. He sees the dirty looks cause he don't speak the English good, and feels the tension every time he's walking through the neighborhood. He don't stress it though, he just gotta be alive. He seen his cousin die in the desert, coming from the other side. He wasn't lucky enough to be born in a country where the dollar's worth 10 times the amount of his nation's currency. But still, people forget to count their blessings. So cause he is in the citizen, they view him like he's lesser than them. One night he's taking a walk with his girlfriend, his wife. Three drunk white boys approach him and start picking a fight. Tries to avoid it, they stick him, he's out for the night. And they proceed to stop him till he stops breathing and dies. That ain't the worst of it, the trial was a jury. And cause he was illegal, they think it's his fault that he's buried. I guess they worthy a dog's life more than a Mexican's. Michael Vick ain't never killed a man, but still they fucking sentenced him.
Yeah, they say all men are equal. And maybe that's just all pretend. We all bleed and breathe the same air. Regardless of the skin. If you ain't never been where the sun don't shine, where you risk anything just to have a better life, then maybe you should think twice before you start judging.
18 dead in a truck stop in Texas. Father with the son in his arms, found breathless. 5 years old, suffocation was his role. Trying to claw the insulation just to breathe through any hole. Like, please, let us catch a hint of the breeze. 18 wheeler full of heat, 120 degrees. So what's the price of your American air? Me and my son left home and didn't care to prepare. Give us a break though, cause it hurts to see a tear go down his face slow. Especially when you look around with nowhere to escape, no, nowhere to be found. Sweating so profound, truck driver left the trailer with the cries without a sound. They died innocent, legal free of any sin. Illegal trying to live an equal life like many men have been. But since they're Mexican or any skin reflecting them, it's easy to neglect on how they died to be free. Rest
yeah.
in peace.
They say all men are equal, and maybe that's just all pretend. We all bleed and breathe the same air, regardless of the skin. If you ain't never been where the sun don't shine, where you risk anything just to have a better life, then maybe you should think twice before you start judging. Who don't wanna be free? Who don't wanna know freedom? People die to be free. People die for their freedom.
But let's just talk about some of the work that the Libertarian Socialist Caucus is doing. I like that you brought up the brake lights thing. I think that is actually really cool. I don't know if you want to talk about that, but I'm assuming there's a lot more things that LSC is doing beyond fixing brake lights, if you want to talk about that.
You know, we draw people in at kind of the practical level rather than the theoretical, just like with that brake light, with the brake lights campaign. You know, that's something concrete and material that we can offer to people. And I want to be kind of clear that that's not an LSC project. That came from a single member and then a group of members in a chapter, and they produced the how-to guide. LSC is within the caucus is definitely, I can't speak for the whole caucus, but I think that they're very supportive of that effort. But it was not like LSC's doing.
We don't want to steal brake like valor.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We just really love it.
But
we are responding to the needs of the members internally, the needs of all DSA members. We've set up a Zoom account for anyone in DSA to use. We've set up a comrade connector so that DSA folks in different chapters and within their chapters can find each other. We are highly involved with the DSA medics training, which I know Sauce mentioned before. They've had trainings now coast to coast. I know Sauce has helped in the Bay Area, and I've helped down there and in Portland. We have facilitators in large and small DSA chapters doing kind of a variety of LEFT work around the country. Like I've said, I went to Portland and was working with some other LSC folks on the ground at Occupy ICE, and we have lots of other members who are involved in that work across the country.
Yeah, and just on, even on the interpersonal level, some of the work that LSC members have been doing has been building connections and solidarity and, dare I say, friendships with each other. That is... I mean, when I was sexually assaulted by a comrade, the people who supported me the most and have continued to support me the most through that have been members of the Libertarian Socialist Caucus. And so just the love and the kindness that I find within that caucus, especially when compared with, if you maybe look at some Facebook groups that are more widely drawing from a wider group of ideologies, there's a significant difference there to me, that so many people in LSC like really truly fucking care about each other, and it is so uplifting and amazing.
If I could say one thing about that, so like I am a mom, and I've lived in poverty my whole life, and I've always, like, I just don't fit in the corporate world, but I did it for a long time because I needed the health insurance, and I've never felt like I fit in anywhere until I've met the folks in LSC, and I have never felt like, as a mom, that I could be so empowered, right? And, I mean, for instance, like, even Sauce and I, we were selected by a vote. So the LSC as a whole, you know, believed in us to do this work. And it feels really good to have such a swelling of support behind me, and that we practice that every day, that prefigurative politics of making our caucus what we want to see in the bigger world. I have found some of the most trusted comrades I've ever met in my whole life through libertarian socialism. And I think it speaks to kind of that that quirky generation between millennials and Gen Xers, which seemingly a lot of us fit into in LSC, where, you know, we're really, truly digital natives, but we don't quite fit in with the Gen Xers. We don't quite fit in with, like, that millennial crowd. And we've had, like, a substantially different experience. You know, we graduated high school at the dot-com bust, et cetera, et cetera. We've just kind of always been fucked over. And I think a lot of us are really tired of it. And we've been experienced and screwed over in the corporate world long enough that we know their tactics and we're ready to use those against them.
And one of the benefits to, I think LSC is maybe on average a little bit older than the mean age of the new members of DSA. I myself am 30 mumble. And one of the benefits from that is that many of us saw how Occupy, kind of the reasons why Occupy I didn't succeed, and bring that into our work with LSC so that we can maybe learn from those pitfalls and try and create structures in our caucus and within our chapters and in our own communities that can prevent those same mistakes from happening again.
Do you just want to speak to some of those mistakes as you see them?
I'll use my chapter as an example. When we make decisions, when we do decision making, we use a modified form of consensus. We use a consent form. So any objections or any blocks must be reasoned blocks. And the expectation is that we will continue to try and work to find a way around those blocks, rather than, as we saw in Occupy, kind of the downfall of consensus where anyone could block anything and that was just it. it was there was really nowhere to go after that. That and everybody from top left and top right of the political spectrum, the political graph, tells you, oh, read Tyranny of Structurelessness. Read it. It'll tell you why your ideology is wrong. But especially they'll say, oh, that shows you why anarchy is wrong or why libertarian socialism can't survive. But one of the things that LSC is doing is we are purposefully creating a horizontal structure so that you don't get the informal leadership. You don't get the members to build great amounts of social capital and use that in order to have power over others. Because part of we expect that we are not perfect. We expect that we are going to fuck up, and we want to build structures that mean when we do, the damage that happens is minimized. So if I, for example, one morning wake up and decide that I want to seize the reins of power and I want to change the colors of the LSC Twitter header, there are some structures that would prevent me from doing that. Some structures that maintain this requirement for not consensus. For LSC we use Lumio to do a lot of our voting, so having those in place kind of protects us from our own worst impulses.
But at the same time, there's really nothing stopping Sauce from trying it. Right, like she could make a header and she could submit it and get some discussion going on it. So we don't have to worry about asking for permission. We do the things and then talk about them. Right. So I think there's a lot of good that comes out of that. With we don't have as many of the idea people. Like, we have great ideas, but we're realistic about that because they have to be taken, you know, they have to be discussed. And so that time is more agreed that that's brainstorm time instead of action time, you know. And I think one thing that we've learned and I've really implemented is having a very strong set of shared values and shared expectations of each other, and making sure that all of that is transparent and accountable. And so it doesn't matter what role you find yourself in at any given moment, there are structures in place to help you be accountable to yourself and to everyone else.
For example, there are many people in LSC who will call me in if I try to change the header of the LSC Twitter, because for one, I'm not a part of that working group, and for two, I have terrible taste in aesthetics and graphics. So,
well, I was hoping we could just do a couple questions that aren't on the list here if we have time. I'm just kind of curious what you all think. What will happen to DSA in terms of membership, of just, you know, where the whole kind of enchilada is going, both in terms of like the midterms, but also the next election, which is actually rapidly approaching. Do you think that there will be kind of like a shaking of the tree, and that, you know, some of the people that are more into becoming like a left wing of the Democratic Party will kind of leave, and that, you know, building kind of a grassroots organization will be more on the table? Or how do you see things playing out?
So I'm speaking for myself here and not for the caucus, but I think it's kind of silly not to think that there will be members who are attracted to electoral campaigns and the promise of what could happen if their candidate wins. I think that's a real practicality or a real expectation of something that could happen. It's common on the left. It happens. So I think we are all pretty aware of that. And I guess in my mind, I think that might be a good thing, because that's what they want to do. And clearly, maybe that's a better place for them. if they don't, again, like having the shared values are most important, and as long as they fit in that, I think it's good. I hope that DSA as an organization can continue to rally around things that are not flashy and things that are not, always popular on Twitter or popular that get magazine sales. I would like to see a lot more work on the ground, doing the work, supporting sex workers, supporting immigrants' rights, continuing on with the Occupy ICE work. I think there's real potential there for DSA members to make change.
Yeah, sometimes I'm quite pessimistic about the future of DSA because I sometimes see the disagreements. I sometimes focus far too much on those rather than the overall work that we are doing, either as a caucus or as individuals or as DSA itself. I have my concerns about kind of where DSA will go over the next couple of years. The next convention is coming up in 2019, and I think that will really be will kind of be a big test for what the membership truly feels, because between convention, unfortunately, there's not really much chance for us to all get together and kind of take the pulse of the organization. And so I'm working off my own understanding of what members of DSA are interested in based on people that I know and people that I talk with. But there are so many members, new members, future members, that it's maybe a big surprise come 2019. As Christopher Barella said, if somebody feels that their true calling is the kind of political work that gets you a lanyard and they wish to leave DSA to do that, more power to you. If you think that is where you can make the biggest impact, then you go and do that. Just, I won't get in your way if you don't get in my way, and we can have diversity of tactics.
I completely agree, Sauce. And I think, like, one thing that LSC has been really, really good at, and I think some of that is given our tendency to be a little bit older, it's that we've kind of shown some folks, especially people who are a bit younger that haven't experienced life before, like, the media conglomerates got to be how they are, right? I think we've shown them that it's okay to talk back and it's okay to stand up and not fall for respectability politics. I think, since DSA is, really, really white and very young, I think they've grown up commonly in a world where you can kind of get away with whatever you want if you're polite about it. And I think some of those folks are really, especially with what's happened since the election, I think people are starting to see that, like, that moderate attitude of civility and respect and showing deference to people in suits. I think we've all slowly, at least I hope so, I think they're starting to figure out that that's just such bullshit. And that's something that we've, in LSE, I think, come to learn within ourselves for quite some time.
Yeah, it's not just killing the cop inside our head, but it's also killing the censor inside our heads and the person wearing the business suit inside our heads, which kind of sounds like a bloodbath now I put it that way, but
right.
Respectability politics kind of, I come to socialism from a place of love, and so I tend to focus on the good and on the positive, and when I do yell at people, it tends to be in the kind of the Mr. Rogers would be disappointed in you kind of style yelling. But we don't all have to be like that, and sometimes you gotta yell at a Nazi. Sometimes you gotta chase somebody out of a restaurant. Sometimes you gotta show that we know who you are and we know what you are doing and we are not gonna stand for it.
Mm-hmm. Just like I've seen in Portland and experience this week, like I saw people really upset that we were loud and we were taking up space and we were shouting and calls for civility were there. And it was so jarring to see and hear that when at the same time, people have been hit by cars in Portland at the Occupy camp. We have, you know, the MAGA people, the alt-right people circling the grounds in giant trucks revving their engines. We see that kind of violence in their actions. And, you know, where there's not calls for that kind of civility on them. So I think that's very telling. And I think it's starting to show people that, like, we have to take a side on this and we have to take a stand, and it's okay to speak against these people because they're making a choice to do what they're doing. Even the paper pushers in maybe a Geo Group office somewhere, and Geo Group contracts with the government to hold ransom ICE detainees. You know, even the paper pushers for Geo Group are complicit in this, and they should be called out. And it is right and good to disrupt their dinner every single day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. That's been awesome to see. And you know, just one last question: how do you see LSC groups relating to the broader anarchist movement, anti-authoritarian groups? I mean, there's really a renaissance of anarchist, anti-authoritarian organizing. I mean, from a variety of organizations and networks, and you know, there's a lot of media work being done. There's a lot of organizing, but I'm just curious, kind of how you all see yourselves, like in relation to that specifically.
Mm-hmm. So I draw a lot of inspiration from people like Francis Fox Piven, who wrote The Poor People's Movement. And I draw from those sorts of grassroots movements. And I think that it's absolutely beautiful that all of these different anarchist groups and groups like ours are forming, because we need to have those bonds between each other. Called bridging social capital, where we form bonds between heterogeneous groups so we can form those coalitions. But at the same time, within our groups, we form what's called bonding social capital. And those are the bonds that we form within each other in our group. And so when we stand together, we're more like, you know, like a web or a mesh. And it's a lot harder to pick off and go through and penetrate that web. Whereas if you are, you know, doing a nationwide, nationwide homogeneous group, it's not as easy because there's not many approaches. There's just the one, and it's a lot easier to take that down.
Yeah. As far as I am concerned for work with anarchist comrades, I mean, invite me to your picnics, invite me to your things. I will come out and I will probably bring food that I bought rather than made, because I'm not very good at making food. But yeah, let's work together. Like the main reason that I went to DSA rather than going to an affinity group was that I could find DSA and I could not find an affinity group. I looked and because I didn't have that in, because I was new, DSA was kind of a gateway drug for that. I came into DSA anarcho-curious, and now I'm, you know, a democratic confederalist / communalist, like, it radicalized me.
Absolutely. I think the thing for me, like I've had these ideas and beliefs inside of me for a very, very long time. And I came from, like the Midwest unionism tradition, and growing up in that almost, you know, tell it like it is Chicago style. And I've really come into my own because I feel like finally I found people who think like me, rather than having to mold myself into a group. Like, this group molds itself around each other and ourselves. And that's what I feel like makes us so successful and will, like, continue making us successful into the future.
Yeah, because we, within LSC, I feel like my membership has kind of teased out more of the libertarian socialist within me that was in there. It was just waiting for the right crime think pamphlet. like that one of the, like, I have been a socialist my entire life, but for so long I did not know that that's what it was. I didn't have a word for it. And the way that I realized that I was a democratic confederalist or that I was a communalist was by going to a comrade and saying, okay, so this is what I think. This is how I think is really the only way we're going to survive the next 4-8 years, you know, by forming small groups that the government will not help us. We must help ourselves. And what ideology am I? And they suggested that I Google Murray Bookchin. And it turned out that that was actually not just a meme in this case. It was actually applied. And, you know, I was a type of libertarian socialist, but I didn't know it because I didn't know that that's what that was. And that's one of the things that the caucus has helped me with, has helped me put words to my deeply held moral and personal beliefs. It's helped me use terms that other people recognize rather than my just waving my hands a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Although I still do that as well.
I think that kind of speaks to how LSC is, because we're a group for, like, all ages and stages. So we don't, like, have our head up our asses in academia. We talk to everyone where they are at. And so
some of us do read a lot. But
totally. Yeah. I just mean, like, the haughty, you know, snobs. We don't hardly have that in LSC, but we are all, like, we all come at this from our own life experience. And, like, for me personally, I think that frontline customer service workers, since we've worked with some of the most rancid humans alive and they've kind of shit all over us, I think, like, we've really started to understand how we feel about the world, but we don't know the right words. And LSC's really helped with that.
Awesome. We've been talking to two members of the Libertarian Socialist Caucus, which is part of the Democratic Socialists of America, or DSA. It's been a very enlightening conversation. I personally have learned a lot, stuff that I didn't know about either organization. And anything else you want to touch on? Anything else you want to say? Anything else that's happening soon that you want to give a shout out to, or, you know, just put on people's radar?
I think personally, just a shout out to all of the Occupy ICE work that is going on and the Occupy ICE stuff that is still yet to come. I really hope that something amazing comes out of it. I can already see something amazing coming out of it, but I really hope that more amazingness comes out of it.
I think I obviously say the same. There's been a lot of really, really good hard work done on the ground, and I think we have more to come. And I'm really excited for it. And my kiddo's been next to me this entire time, and she says, "More meetings."
Ah! Wow. What are you teaching this kid?
She really hates rich people right now, and I am all here for it. She's learned a lot about the way the world works. It's been a wonderful experience.
This has been the It's Going Down podcast. Check itsgoingdown.org for daily updates, columns, action reports, and news. Go to itsgoingdown.org/shop to support us. And follow us on all social media platforms. IGD, your daily resource for insurgent proletarian life.